Very good morning to you, my dear listener, wherever you find yourself in this beautiful land of the brave. It's quite a bit chilly today. It's a quite a nice chill morning. I hope it continues to be that way. It has been one of the weather has been really quite hot around here. So we thought winter is coming, but this 3 days or so, it hasn't been kind. It has been really hot. Hopefully today, the weather throughout the day probably, you know, feel this nice and chill. So good morning to you. Hope you have a beautiful weather wherever you are. So welcome to Eagle FM. Thanks for joining us this morning. My name is Mike Oshoveli, and you are tuned into Unpacking the Day, the show where we dive deep into the stories, events, and issues that shape our world. So this show is all about breaking down the headlines, exploring the context behind the news, and understanding how it impacts our lives. Whether it is the latest development in politics, business, culture, or social issues, we are here to make sense of it all together. So, but it's not just about us talking. It is about you. Share your thoughts, opinion, and perspective on the topics that matter most to you. So this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So it's the 21st of May, 2025. And let's see what happened on this day in Africa. So the in 1991, on the 21st of this month, 21st of May in 1991, Ethiopian leader Mengistu Haile Mariam flees the country. So with the rebel forces closing in on Addis Ababa, the head of the Ethiopian People Democratic Republic slipped out of the capital, effectively bringing the Ethiopian civil war to an end. And on the same day in 1996, seven Trappist monks of Tibirin are killed in Algeria. So after being abducted by the Islamist militant in March, these monks were found executed on this day, underscoring the violence that engulfed Algeria's civil war or civil conflict during the 1990s. And in 2003, a magnitude 6.8 earthquake struck northern Algeria. The Bomides quake killed over 2,200 people, injured 1,000 more, and generated a small tsunami that damaged boats of the Balearic Islands, drawing attention to the Northern African seismic risks. So other global observation marked in Africa is today a World Day for Cultural Diversity, for Dialogue and Development. I think this is a United Nations observance. Also on May 21st, highlights the importance of cultural diversity and dialogue, values are deeply embedded in Africa's rich tapestry of cultures. So, and our thought for the day on the Wednesday, May the 21st, what doesn't kill you, make you stronger. I think you are familiar with that one. What it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. So the problem is that enduring hardship, suffering or challenges can help you grow as a person. So instead of breaking you, difficult experiences can build your resilience, teach valuable lessons, and strengthen your character. So as an example, So if someone loses their job, the initial suffering might feel overwhelming. However, as they navigate this period of unemployment, they may develop new skills and discover alternative opportunities or gain a deeper understanding of their own abilities and values. So this proverb encourages optimism and perseverance, suggesting that hardship is not just something to endure, but an opportunity to grow stronger and wiser. So, thanks for joining us. If you're joining us, you're welcome to Unpacking the Day. And my name is Mike Oshoveli. So when we come back, we get into the story of today. So quickly, let's have this announcement done by. Yeah. So the Virtual University September intake 2025. All programs are fully credited by the NQA. So certificate in Health Science Foundation level 4. A 1 year program full time all campuses. Certificate for enrollment nurses, wife, midwife, Akosha level 6, a 2 year program, full time in Windhoek, Kurenkuru, Kompat, Wavis Bay, Katima Muliro, and Autapi. A diploma in environmental health science, level 6, a 2 year programs, full time in Windhoek. A bachelor of nursing, midwifery science honors, a 4 year program, full time in Windhoek. Kurenkuru, Kompat, Wavis Bay, and Katima Muliro. Postgraduate diploma in mental health nursing, level 8. A 1 year program, full time in Windhoek. And a postgraduate diploma in community health nursing, a level 8. Level 8. A 1 year program, full time in Windhoek. So the application period started on the 1st of May and it will end on the 30th of June 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. So the Virtual University, where everyone is an achiever. So when we come back, we get into our first item on the show. Stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, Leo Sherero Omainburiro, the Catholic Simaneka Karunga, the Afrikaans Selfwar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@umalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good morning to you. If you're just joining us now, welcome to Unpacking the Day, where we dive into issues shaping Namibia's development and future. And today we are taking a closer look at the lifelines of any growing economy, its infrastructure. So are Namibia's infrastructure plans ambitious enough? What if the roads and railways we build today are not just for us, but for a region united in trade, travel, and opportunity? Imagine transport corridor seamlessly linking Windhoek to Lusaka, Wabish Bay to Gaborone, creating a network of shared growth and prosperity. To bring this vision to life, Namibia cannot go it alone. Strong regional collaborations, harmonized regulations, and innovative funding strategies are essential to unlock our infrastructure potentials. But how do we ensure every project is more than just a concept? How do we overcome the barriers to investment and coordination that so often slow us down? So joining us to unpack these critical questions is Mr. Emmanuel Kadira, Managing Director of EOS Capital. Good morning, Emmanuel. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me this morning.
All right. You were one of the panelists during a recent panel discussion hosted by the Namibia Savings and Investment Association, NASIA. So you argued that fragmented legal and regulatory frameworks are a major stumbling block for the regional infrastructure investment. So what are the most critical inconsistency in our current SADC laws that must be addressed?
Thanks, Mike. As discussed at the panel discussion,
yeah,
in my view, and obviously we have picked it up when we are putting together the regional infrastructure fund.
You sound far, Mr. Emmanuel, you sound far a little bit from the phone.
Okay, let me sort it out.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we hear you better, yeah.
Okay. No, thanks, Mike, for the question. So as discussed in the panel discussion, and obviously some of these gaps in the legal frameworks across the region is some of the lessons we have learned as we were setting up the regional infrastructure fund at EOS Capital.
Yeah.
We have found that some of the most critical inconsistencies, for instance, include just the difference or the divergence in procurement laws. The triple P, you have heard that at the panel discussion that Namibia is yet to implement any triple P project that is over 20 years. The triple P that has been started over 15, 20 years ago. The divergence in these laws, such as the triple P regulations, are some of the critical inconsistencies. You have examples of South Africa that is relatively advanced triple P framework, but other countries like Namibia or Zambia or any other country, they lack clear risk allocation, for instance, when it comes to projects. They lack enforceable concession agreement, for instance, when it comes to project structuring and packaging, which then results in somewhat costly duplications, and when you move from one country to another.
Yeah.
And these are some of the things that discourages investors to enter in one country as opposed to another.
Yeah. So now when it comes down to triple PP legislation, how would you prioritize which sectors, for example, transport, energy, or water, require harmonized the PPP legislation across the region?
Again, referring to the infrastructure fund that we have put together, which we call the Regional Infrastructure Fund, it's Infrastructure Without Borders. We have found that one of the key sectors is transport, as you mentioned, and energy. In our view, this must be prioritized. In their nature, they are cross borders, inherently, in their nature.
Yeah.
And they are quite foundational and fundamental to regional trade integration. Sectors like water, they are very, very important, but mostly and typically they are more localized. But we have seen attempts, for instance, from Botswana trying to get water from the desalination at our coast and running the path through the country all the way to Botswana, obviously benefiting any other country closer to Botswana.
Yeah.
But in our view, we think logistics has become quite critical in the form of transport, whether it's railway or roads. Dryport, for instance, comes alongside all these all the railway tracks that can be built. And then we have energy. We already have a functioning SEP model. Although relatively lowly tapped, we think these are some of the sectors that can be prioritized in the regional infrastructure framework.
So, and what are the what incentives should be offered now to individual countries to adopt a common legal approach rather than actually sticking to national interests or statutes?
In our view, if we are to have harmony or to harmonize, if we are to harmonize regional regulatory frameworks and obviously come up with regional infrastructure master plans, different countries in SADC should ideally have preferential access to regional infrastructure funds. And this is why we have made available our infrastructure fund across the region. There should be some form of technical assistance and to a large extent transactional advisory support. Again, you will find that asset managers like EOS Capital, by nature, they will be well placed to do this. You then have performance-based grants, for instance, from the likes of the AFDBs or any partners of the region, so that countries can be encouraged and incentivized to participate in regional harmonizations of frameworks.
How would the infrastructure funds funded again? How would that? What are the mechanisms that's going to be used to fund this regional infrastructure funds?
It can be funded through institutional investors, the likes of the pension funds, the likes of, because the pension funds have long-term appetite for risk and return. They have patient capital, so that they can be one of the primary investors in this regional infrastructure fund. Then you have other long-term investors like your insurance. Then obviously you have your DFIs that can either invest into the regional funds or alongside the regional infrastructure fund. And then you have your international partners who comes and obviously look for investment opportunities, the likes of the World Bank, or even the sovereign countries themselves, like the Chinese, who would like to come into the regions and invest in the infrastructure. This could be some of the vehicles that can be used to attract various types of financing.
Yeah. So during your discussion on the panel, you mentioned that investor want predictability. How do you qualify or measure predictability in the context of cross-border infrastructure projects?
Yeah, predictability can be measured in many ways. I think in terms of cross-border transactions, I think one of them and probably most important is, for instance, how long does it take to finalize, to get to financial closure?
Yeah.
The longer it takes, probably because of different types of laws that sit in different countries, then the less investors you will attract in the region. Then you have, for instance, consistency of tariff regimes. If the tariff regimes are not consistent across countries within the regions, then you have, and it's going to take very long for financial goals or even just to bring projects to bankability. And then we have speaking through this conversation around legal frameworks. If we don't have, for instance, stable legal frameworks, for instance, there is no retroactive changes. If we have entered into an agreement, we are not going to go back to it.
Mm.
Or these legal frameworks are not similar across borders, then you might have a problem. And investors like stability, predictability in such. Then you have other things such as the average time to resolve a dispute.
Yeah.
I mean, in any transaction, in any relationship, there is always an expectation that there might be some disagreement along the way. But if that happens in an unlikely event, do we take a short time to get to dispute resolution? And obviously, lastly, maybe among many, is transparency in procurement. I think Namibia is doing quite well in this regard. We have, for instance, published bid evaluations. We have set rules and very clear from the beginning. We understand from the beginning this is what is going to be changed, and nothing will be changed in between. So it's some of these things that investors are looking for, and they call it predictability for them to be attracted to a certain project or even into a certain country or region.
Yeah. So you also mentioned the idea of infrastructure without borders. What would be a shared master plan for a transport corridor? How would, say, for a north-south transport corridor, how would that look like in practice?
That's a very good question. So you have all the affected countries, obviously, that affected economically, they all benefit from this master plan.
Yeah.
For instance, you have a unified plan or route design from one city to another. I can give an example from Devon to DRC via Zambia, and then to Namibia, for instance. We have seen a lot of trucks going through from Zambia, Botswana, through Namibia, all the way to our port.
Yeah.
And then you have a shared traffic modeling and potentially border post or border control design. And then you have probably joint environmental and social impact assessment. And then maybe most importantly is having a single contracting authority.
Yeah.
With clear and defined mandates on what to do and how to implement the master plan.
So now when it comes now to to political will or so what are the what have you found out, what have you find so far, what are the biggest political obstacle to establishing a truly integrated logistic network across SADC, and how can they be overcome if there are barriers or some obstacles?
I think generally, and not necessarily what we have found out, is you generally expect, for instance, protectionism to kick in.
Yeah.
Every time we talk about cross-border projects, protectionism kicks in. We have, for instance, sovereignty fears.
Yeah.
And then we have issues of electoral cycles, where there's potential for disruption. Every country will think after 5 years we might have a different regime change. And there is always a perceived inequality in benefit distribution.
Yeah.
We have seen this with, for instance, the SACU, revenue sharing. Yeah, almost every year, each one of the countries think they are not well compensated. But given these obstacles, we still have, old institutions like SACU, which I have mentioned, it's one of the oldest agreements in the world up to now is working.
Mr. Kadira, we have a commercial quickly, and I think we will be back in a second. Yeah.
Need lightning fast internet? Rogers has you covered. The network Namibia relies on. Whether for business or pleasure, Paratus' cutting-edge technology ensures both reliable and speedy internet connectivity. We exist to serve your needs through a high-quality network and pride ourselves in offering client service excellence. Connect to Paratus today. Visit us online at paratus.africa/Namibia or call us on 083-300-1000.
All right, welcome back. So you were looking at the biggest political obstacle, and maybe also look at how can they be overcome.
Yeah. So what I was saying is that we have all institutions like SACU that have worked despite all these challenges. But some of the solutions, I think, is linking, for instance, regional infrastructure with national development goals. You will see every country is having its own national development goals that are not entirely linked to regional development goals, if there are even any. And if we can just link these regional infrastructure goals or development agendas to national development goals, I think it can actually overcome some of these obstacles.
Yeah.
And then you have things like transparency, as well as just engaging citizens to maintain support. Even if there's a regional regime change, you have the support of each one of the citizens of each country that this cross-border infrastructure are quite important. But I think equally is just to establish, to use things like the SADC tribunals or similar bodies to resolve disputes. Instead of investors fearing that probably disputes will take long because they are being done under specific country laws, you can use bodies like the SADC tribunal to resolve disputes quicker and faster.
All right. Yeah. So, and from EOS Capital's perspective, what role can private investors actually play in driving now regional integration agenda forward?
Some of the roles that the private sector and especially PE firms like EOS Capital does is to ensure that or advocate for bankable projects. We also provide sort of early early stage input on risk mitigation. So we look at a project and we advise on how to mitigate risk, how to structure projects through structuring. We also then co-invest in alongside the DFIs, for instance, to bring the much needed blended capital or financing in the region. You will see that we don't have as much. And maybe one of the most important things that we PE firms does is we have rigorous project screening and due diligence standards and processes to ensure that this little project failure at the end.
So, and now, how do you see this proposed, let's say, SADC infrastructure development fund integrating with existing national pensions and other sovereign wealth funds? How do you see that?
Just repeat that again.
So how do you see the proposed SADC infrastructure development fund interacting actually with the existing national, like national pensions and sovereign wealth funds?
In my view, or in our view, regional infrastructure fund, and it's not only one fund, we need a lot of regional infrastructure funds. And I think the likes of the GIP have done well to have started in 2018-19 to have started the first infrastructure fund in the country. So the regional infrastructure fund will therefore allow for pulling of investments from the likes of the GIPF, from the likes of the PIC, from the likes of the similar, the PIM in Botswana, and from the sovereign wealth funds. And these are long-term investors. It then also allow the ring fencing of, you can call it sub-funds, for specific infrastructure type or sectors. Or even corridors to say this infrastructure we're gonna ring fence it, and we attract specific investors for this specific ring fenced corridor, for instance. But also, it brings the much needed de-risking instruments. The guarantees, for instance, the first loss. Tranches for pension funds just to suit these long-term investors such as the sovereign wealth funds. So it's I would like to encourage that ideally as much as we would like, it's not a single infrastructure fund, but obviously to have as many infrastructure funds, even sectoral infrastructure fund that can be funded from multitude of interested and investors. Different investors have different appetites, risk appetites, for instance, which can be derived from different sectors. And therefore, if we have, for instance, water infrastructure fund, renewable energy infrastructure fund, maybe oil and gas infrastructure fund, and each one of then you have a lot of choice for a number of investors.
Yeah, so they are also concerned in terms of transparency and also maybe preventing that this whole it's not politically captured. So what governance safeguards can be built into a SADC wide infrastructure, funds or bank to ensure now the transparency and preventing political capture?
I would like us to resist from the idea of an infrastructure bank, or the idea of building another regional infrastructure bank. I think there is enough of these institutions. We have the FDB, we have DBSA, we have IDCs, we have all is they already offer capital and expertise in infrastructure funding. And this is why, again, I repeat, we propose and we have already started doing our part. We propose regional infrastructure funds, as many as possible.
Yeah.
Which can be by sectoral, by theme, corridor, and they can have governance structures that include public and private sectors. Ordinarily and inherently, private equity, they are in a private space, so you expect governance to be intact. Obviously, you'll have independent, for instance, majority private investment committees. You will have, for instance, transparent flatland development, and project evaluation criteria, very, very independent. This infrastructure funds reports to board and investors. They have strict reporting criteria, to these different governance structures. And often there is little or no intervention from government. Such that then the bureaucracy become very, very low, and you have turnarounds that are quite fast. Just of recent, I think 2 days ago, the president of Botswana was speaking to our president about the Botswana-Namibia corridor that has taken over 15 years. To take off. Up to today, it has not taken off. It started 2010. To date, nothing had happened. And that's because of governance issues, I think, that you're asking for, that can delay projects even for more than 20 years.
Now, just giving that example, now, what timeline do you envisage for moving now from this fragmented national frameworks to a fully harmonized regional funds or code?
I think we have started. Each one of the countries we've started, we have, for instance, PIC, there they have a budget of 100 billion to invest outside outside South Africa. We have EOS Capital and probably other PE funds that they have started now looking outward, or investing in what we call infrastructure without borders. We have started, but I think if I have to be specific, we still have a long way to go. But if we are to make an impact, I will say. In fact, I think in the current 5 years we have political environment that is very, very supportive of doing things differently, not only in Namibia, but I think across the region. You look at Botswana, South Africa, and Namibia. So I think we have the political environment and support that can actually help us create an environment where the private sector can create as many of these funds as possible. But I think also just economically, and the region is ripe for investment. We have seen what is happening in.
So we can't hear you anymore? Emmanuel? You completely disappeared. We can't hear you. Okay, if you can hear me, I'll call you back and we can just finalize our discussions. We can't hear you.
Well, yeah, we'll be back. I'm going to call him so that we can just actually conclude our discussion. He just disappeared. Well, stay tuned. We will be back.
Omutiha with the Kirokabuna, Imatina Omjo. She calls a fat and an analogy. She fat, yeah, she became what she wanna. Iyo Moyawa. ota ingongo tithamweni. Ana jesifa ya Namibia, ombitombwa na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randito mwa yoye, yongesifa yoyo kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo, lengira selma, konarahe tatuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, ondiyaj. Eagle FM, go high.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Uh-huh. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Yeah, I think we lost connection with, but we have him back. Yeah. So now, what may be the immediate? Are you there? Can I hear? Are you okay? Okay. Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah. So, what immediate next step can stakeholder now take in the next, say, 6 months to kickstart legal harmonization and share master planning exercise?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. Mike, I think a lot has happened, a lot has been tried. It's not as if, when you talk about harmonization, it's not as if we have not tried before, but we have the right, probably the right political environment now. I think we need, as an immediate action, we need to convene or start a strategic infrastructure harmonization task team that is, in my view, should ideally be considered of the private sector mostly.
Yeah.
I think we should finalize some, we can call it template for PPP and procurement laws regionally. We should encourage, or the government should actually launch and encourage, we can call it corridor specific fund or infrastructure fund. And I think most important of all is to secure political commitment at events such as the SADC summit.
Mm.
Where the politicians can make a commitment that they will commit to supporting, for instance, corridor-specific funds, as discussed, or even finalizing regional PPP arrangements and harmonizing some of the procurement laws.
Yeah. So if, maybe finally now, if this comes to be materialized, how would you measure success in, let's say, in your first 3 years of now truly regional logistic network? How would you measure success when it comes now to usage, maybe financial sustainability, and also economic impact?
I will look at, for instance, the number and maybe the value of PPPs that has been signed and implemented.
Yeah.
Like I said, Namibia have not implemented any at this point, any PPP project at this point, despite working on the laws and guidelines for quite many years, and obviously setting up a triple P unit. So the number and values of triple P's projects signed in the region will be one of the metrics or the indicators.
Yeah.
Maybe the also is equally important is the infrastructure fund capital deployed or leveraged. Because obviously the more the number of projects you implement, the higher the financial implication.
Yeah.
So how much capital have you attracted into this infrastructure funds that we are proposing, and how much of that has been deployed? But I think on the projects themselves, for instance, we then look at for instance, Rabbit Bay to Zambia, the freight volume, how much was cleared there to Zambia or to any other country, you can measure those, or the border crossing times between the different countries, which is obviously facilitated by railway, by roads, by shared border control infrastructure. I think. And then obviously you have some of the socio-economic measurements or metrics. Infrastructure come with huge employment creation opportunities.
Yeah.
You will have a lot of local employment numbers in each one of the regions that, or countries that's affected by any infrastructure project that is implemented under these new harmonizations. Then you have, you can look at, the cost of logistics. So the idea of having this infrastructure is to make sure that you have, to reduce the cost of logistics, or the cost of moving goods. From one place to another. Another
physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app, here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics Imane Kakarunga, the Africans Sung for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kagona imatina omjo. Chikawa shafasana nana longi shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo otaingongo tisamweni. Anage shifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayaguro nirandito mwa iwe yonge shifa yoyo kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimeneha uka kombanga nina. kara ong pasipareki wimo po yung mga programa dito mo ang mo lingira sa oma o narahit at wimo datun datu kaya di kamanon tano o ang biyaj Eagle FM go ahead.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.
All right, welcome back. And if you just joining us, you are tuned into Unpacking at the Day. And yeah, we're moving on. I think there's a very interesting articles actually covered in the Forbes publications. And before we dive into that, so let me paint the backdrop of this story. So the piece we are unpacking, maybe we can unpack now, comes from the Forbes publication published yesterday and authored by Sevier Alvik. So who lead actually the person who actually wrote this lead the energy transition research at the DNV, the DNV Det Norske Veritas. I think it's an abbreviation for that. So this is it's a person who leads the energy transition research at DNV, a global risk management and quality assurance firm, Forbes. So now the drawing on the DNV latest energy transition outlook. Now he's drawing from that, from DNV latest energy transition outlook. The article highlights a stark funding gap. Okay. Sub-Saharan Africa needing roughly 20 billion each year, you know, 20 billion each year to ensure clean, affordable power for all by 2030. So yet it's only attracting about 8 billion annually. So it's needing about 20 billion, but it's only attracting around 8 billion annually. So what is really trying to, now what is the article is trying to address is this paradox. Despite renewables like solar and wind being the cheapest power sources on the planet, much of Africa's energy investment still actually flow into fossil fuel projects. So the story now zero in on why that is. Now, pointing to the skew financing structure, risk premiums in higher risk regions, and also the role of state-backed funding for large fossil projects. So even if, you know, renewables like solar and wind are being the cheapest power source, we still see that state-backed funding goes to large fossil project, like here. So, and the article now asks, if renewables make so much economic sense, if it makes so much economic sense, why aren't we harnessing them? Why aren't we harnessing renewables to the fullest? Especially here now in Namibia. So why don't we harnessing them to the fullest? For example, in Namibia, across our SADC neighbors and the wide continent. Why are we not harnessing them to the fullest? I think that's the question. So why renewable makes sense for Africa? So that's what you're looking at. So why should we care about renewables? So, the math is quite simple, really. The math is simple. Renewable energy, especially solar and wind, is now cheaper than fossil fuel. So it's actually cheaper than fossil fuels. And Namibia, with its abundant sunshine, it's perfectly positioned to harness solar energy. But like many other countries in the region, we are still actually allocating significant resources to fossil fuel. Even now, it's one of our social priority, and it's one of the enabler. And even given that priority moved, it's even because of that priority, it's even moved to the president office rather than as a ministry on its own. So you see, so this is now, this article is actually trying to look at. So that says even renewable energy, especially solar and wind, is now cheaper. So as than the fossil fuel. So in case of Namibia or still, and we have abundance of sunshine, and we are positioned in a way as a country to harness solar energy. So we still actually focus we're still allocating significant resources to fossil fuels. So now globally, the levelized cost of electricity for renewable is at all time low, according to the article. But here is now what is happening. So investment in renewables in sub-Saharan Africa are actually lagging behind. So, in fact, the example given is that between 2010 and 2020, the region received less than 1.5%, between 2010 and 2020, so the region only received less than 1.5% of global renewable energy funds. 1.5%. And that is actually, that is a tiny fraction. Very, very, very tiny fraction. And when you look at the least developed countries within the sub-Saharan Africa, the number are even worse. So what would be the barriers? What are the barriers to renewable investment? So what are those barriers? So now the answer actually lies in financing, according now to the article. The large scale fossil fuel project is still actually benefiting from the state backed funding. So there are still large scale fuel projects that are actually benefiting from state backed funding, making them actually the more attractive to investors, which is actually the same thing in Namibia. So meanwhile, the renewable project, which require a higher initial investment, are seen as risky, especially in a higher risk region like Africa. So, and we continue to this discussion after this.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it. Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
All right, welcome back. And we're looking at the energy risk in Africa when it comes to This is an article from the from Forbes publication, looking at this dichotomy, if you like, where that we, if renewables, you know, is the way to go in Africa. So, but you know, because in the long run, it's actually cheaper, and but we still actually have our we still see large scale fossil fuel project often actually benefit from even from state backed funding, and that make them more this make them more attractive to investors, and we see that. So although, you know, for us, there's still a little bit of, for now, there's still some attention to our green hydrogen. Still that's still life and kicking. And there are still some projects that still receive a high attention and funding, not necessarily from the government, but, you know, from the investors. So, but it's also the investor always, you know, follow where the government plays importance. So, yeah. So now, as I said, the reasons why there is actually less funding, you know, the reason why that hasn't really picked up since. Maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, the answer actually lies in financing. So because the a large scale fossil fuel project, they are the one that actually getting still benefit from state backed funding, and that actually make them more attractive to investors. So, and meanwhile, renewable energy or renewable project which require higher initial investment are seen as risky, especially also if it's in higher risk regions like Africa. So, yeah, and the other thing is that the cost of capital, the COC, is a bigger factor here as well. So if sub-Saharan Africa had the same cost of capital like Europe, solar capacity in the region could actually be 20% higher by 2050. So, but our region faces higher risk premiums. Due to the, like what we were talking about yesterday, due to the perception of political instability and weak infrastructure. So this means that renewable energy projects become more expensive, and that can actually, and that discourage investors. So, yeah. And now here, the tricky part, where this is where now it gets a little bit tricky. So many African countries, Namibia included, have ambitious renewable energy target. For example, Kenya, for instance, aimed for 100% renewable electricity by 2030, about 5 years to come. So South Africa targets about 41%, you know. But the problem is these targets actually hinge on international support. So not on the country itself. It hinges on international support, which is often slow to materialize, because if there aren't external investors to invest in this, you know, you are unlikely actually to achieve your target. So, and you can take Namibia's green hydrogen project. So an ambitious and a promising initiative, And while it has attracted global attention or global attention, so it highlights the dependency on international capital and also technical support. We need, you know, money from outside, from foreign direct investment. And also we need then technical support. We need people who have, who actually have the know-how in actually this. So, and therefore, even if we set a target, it doesn't really depend on us. So that kind of dependency become a problem actually in reaching our target when it comes to this. So for SADC as a whole, this independency on external funding can be, of course, in a way it can be a blessing, you know, because if you're not, if you don't involve your whatever, your taxpayers' money into it, you may not lose anything if it doesn't really go according to the plan. But as I said, it could be both a blessing and a curse at the same time. So, and the other issue also being highlighted in the article is also another layer. So what he referred to, another layer to the puzzle is the shifting geopolitical landscape with traditional donors now like the US and Europe pulling back, and Africa is left looking elsewhere for funding. So slowly, like what actually the US have done, and slowly in some projects as well, they over the years, the European also pulling back a bit. So, but Africa have to look somewhere else for funding. So, and guess who? Where are we looking at? Of course, China. So, China is where we are looking at for, this is where we're now looking for, where we're looking at, where we're looking for funding. So as a global factory for green tech, China has already invested heavily in Africa. So now, could this be an opportunity for the continent to secure renewable energy funding? Can we get it from China? Or does it also risk becoming overly reliant on another superpower? So you're coming from one, you move to another. So that could be also, yeah, that could be also that we have been reliant on European and the US. So now we're also becoming over reliant to another superpower, China. So for Namibia and its SADC neighbors, this really raises a critical question about sovereignty, and also a long-term sustainability, in terms of this project. And yes, we need the investment, but the question is, at what cost? So now, when we come back, we continue, looking at, you know, what actually this mean, for Namibia and SADC and the continent as a whole. So please stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the RR.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholics Mane Kakarunga, the Africans Self War Tierra, and many more. contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. She calls a fat and an anna, longish fa, yai, she became what she wanna. E. Moyawa, or Tango got the money. Anna is a fa, Yanamibia, on the Tom Banawa, Orangeka. Faith and Nina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongish Fire of Pitamo, Eagle FM Media House. We 20 Meneha, Uruka Kombanga Nina. Kara, Omkashi Pregi, we report your more program at the two.
Welcome to Unpacking Today.
Yes, good morning, sir.
Good morning, how are you?
Fine.
Hmm.
I want to ask for the frequency for Ndangwa. We seems like we have it changed all.
No, it hasn't changed. We just haven't been broadcasting through the through frequency in certain part. So for a while now. Yeah, no, it hasn't changed. So yeah. So for now we have been only broadcasting through the app. Yeah. We're still broadcasting but through the app, but not through the some of the frequency, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Should I have to download it?
Yeah. Just you go to the Google Play. You go to the Google Play and you start, if you write in Eagle FM, the app will definitely come up and you download it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. For now, yeah. We still live. We still broadcasting, but, not in some of the frequencies. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, sir.
All right. All right. So yes, we continue. And if you're just joining us this morning, we had a discussion this morning, with Mr. Emmanuel Kadila, from ES Capital, really discussing about the regional infrastructure funds and how that would help the country in the region actually to attend to some of the infrastructure project in the regions that could harness and harmonize some priorities in the regions. And we went a little bit deeper into that idea. So if you would like to, you know, add your opinion and your contribution on that, you're most welcome. But we're also looking at Africa actually in crisis, in energy crisis. And especially looking at sub-Saharan Africa. So, yeah, and what does this actually mean for Namibia and SADC? So why is all this is relevant to us here in Namibia and the SADC regions? Well, one can say the stake couldn't be higher. So investing in renewables is not just about because mostly people talk about that as about reducing emissions, you know. When you look at it, it's actually about securing our economic future. So it's not just about reducing emission, but it's really about securing our economic future. So renewable energy
We have been promised it can create jobs. So we still want to hear that, please. We still want to hear how, you know, how many jobs that's going to be created. So, yeah, it, as I said, renewable energy can create jobs, can reduce our dependency, and that's very important, can reduce our dependency on imported fuels, on imported energies, and make electricity more accessible and affordable. So that's why we make this a big issue. That's why we discuss this. So for Namibia, this means also leveraging our natural resources. So not just for green hydrogen export, but for domestic energy security as well. So that's why it's very, very important. So, and for SADC maybe, and for SADC region, it means a stronger collaboration, something that we have talked about this morning as well with Mr. Khadira, to create that enabling policy environment that attracts investment while also addressing shared challenges like infrastructure gap. And that was our focus of discussion this morning, and also financing risks. So, yeah, it is really important. So now, as we move forward, I think the question is not whether we should transition to renewables, but it is how we make it happen. How do we make it happen? How do we make even happen? How do we make it happen faster and more equitably, that there aren't a community that is actually left behind. There aren't anybody left behind. So that was our slogan some years ago. Now, the solutions are there. There should be a concessional funds, financing. There should be better risk management. So, yeah. And this morning we talked about regional or stronger regional corporations as well. So what is needed now is the, what is that? Is the political will and the coordinated action to turn the targets that we have into reality, which is the most, you know, the most difficult aspect when it comes to the most difficult component when it comes to this. So they said the difficult journey is from knowledge to implementation. Sometimes there are those, that's the difficult knowledge. The difficult journey is from knowledge to implementation. Even certain things, there are a lot of things that you know you shouldn't do or you should do, but when it comes to implementing it or doing it, it's the most hardest things. So, yeah, that's the most difficult journey. So hopefully we travel that journey to see, that, there is a political will, and maybe what is the most difficult is really now the making sure that it's well coordinated, the whatever plans are, the policies well coordinated to turn targets into reality. So my dear listeners, what are your thoughts on this? And should Namibia and SADC focus more on renewables? Do you think we should focus more on renewables? Or is there
call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Yes, you are tuned in to Eagle FM. And you are tuned in to Unpacking the Day with me, Michael Chiavelli. So we were looking at just now we were looking at the energy crisis in sub-Saharan Africa. And today there's this the article that was published yesterday coming from the Forbes magazines. And it's really, the person who wrote it's actually the person who leads energy. Transition research at the DNV. This is a global risk management and quality assurance firm, Forbes. So, and what it's look at is it's looking at they are drawing now from the DNV's latest energy transition outlook. So, and the article now highlight a stark, you know, that stark funding gap. That there is a funding gap, especially when it comes to sub-Saharan Africa, who actually needs roughly, so we need about roughly 20 billion each year to ensure, so for us, if we want to transition to green energy, so we need at least 20 billion each year to ensure clean, affordable power for all by, and that by now, slowly until by 2030. But it's only attracting about 8 billion annually. So, and we need about 20 billion. So then what is really trying to address then, the whole article that we went through is trying to address, now this, I call it dichotomy or a paradox, if you like. So despite now renewables like solar and wind being now the cheapest, that's now being the cheapest power source on the planet, that because we have it available in abundance. So much of African energy investment still flow into the fossil project. So, and that's now the issue. So the story now go into on why that is, why actually that's the problem, why that is actually where the solar and wind being the cheapest power source on the continent or on the planet, not only on the continent, but on the planet. But we have it more in Africa. So, but we still then, you know, we still invest, our investment is still into fossil fuel project. So that's where this story is trying to point out the skew financing structures, okay, and also the risk premiums in higher risk region like Africa and the role of state backed funding for a large fossil project. So, and the question I think the article is asking, if renewable makes so much sense, if it makes so much economic sense, so why aren't we harnessing why aren't we harnessing it to the fullest in Africa, especially in sub-Saharan Africa and in Namibia, across the SADC neighbors and also in the wider continent. So that is exactly what the article has been trying to look at. So, yeah. And if you're following, so you're most welcome to come through and have your reactions. So we look at some barrier to renewable air investment. What are some of those barriers? And look at also the role of policy and also international support. Those are some of the things that we look at. And also the geopolitical dynamics. As we see, like US and Europe are pulling out on some of the on some of the projects in Africa. So, and Africa may look somewhere else. And of course, we know where. Of course, China. So, yeah, and there's a question of, are we not actually just moving from one superpower to another, becoming more overly reliant to another superpower? So those are also some of the questions. And of course, as Africa and as Namibia, we need investment, but the question is also, at what cost? Are we throwing our future generation, well, are we throwing our generation's future away for immediate, you know, gain? So, and we looked at how this actually, what it means for Namibia and also what it means for ZADC. We looked at that. So we talked about that. And then, so, yeah. All right. So if you have any comment and or contribution on that, you're most welcome to come through. Our telephone number again, 08333660910, 08333660910. Yeah. So that's, so the other thing, maybe before, how many, our time is about 90 minutes past the hour of nine. So we still have about 16 minutes to go before we come to the end of unpacking the day today. Yeah, so there's something, yeah, there is a very, how to say it, there's a very, how would I call that? What is that? There's a very, there's an audit report that's left actually when you listen to it or read it. It's left the Land Acquisition and Development Fund in a bit of a scramble. You know, the Auditor General's, latest review really wrapped the fund over the, as they call it, the knuckles of everything for, you know, over the knuckles for everything, when you think of, it, when it comes to, issues in that fund report, from overstated numbers to millions in directed payments. So what went wrong? And when I'm trying to bring it up here, how does that matter to you and me? What is interesting? Maybe let me give you a first background, you know, so that we understand. This so, and why I'm asking this, why do you think this is matter to you? Now, first thing first, what is exactly this fund? We're talking about the Land Acquisition and Developing Fund. So this fund was actually set up under the agricultural Agricultural Land Reform Amendment Act back in 2000. Okay, it was set up for at Agricultural Act in 2000. And the fund's job, was very simple. The fund's job was actually use the taxpayer money to buy and rehabilitate farms. Then resettle. The other thing is then resettle deserving Namibian on the land. All right? So use Namibian taxpayers' money to buy and rehabilitate farms. And then those who deem to be the right people to settle or to be given that land, resettle them on that land. Now, as of March 31st, 2023, it had over that fund. It has over 85 million sitting in its account. 85 million sitting in its account. Enough is, yeah, enough. It's really enough in theory. When, I mean, that amount of money can make a serious progress on land reform. 85 million still sitting in the account. Yeah. What was the account is all about? It to buy and rehabilitate farms. You mean that there are no other farms that are actually less than that? That's a massive money. It's a lot of money, you know? So, but when the Auditor General now, Junius Kanjeke, took a close look at the 2022-2023 books, he issued now what is called the adverse audit opinion. Now, so in a plain English, that means that the fund's financial statement didn't really give a fair accurate or didn't give a fair or accurate picture of what is happening. So it didn't really give that fair and accurate picture of what was actually happening. Now, there are a couple of issues that the Auditor General have actually been highlighted. So through his adverse audit opinion, one of that is the problem. The problem number one is the fund didn't submit a full set of financial statement as required by international public sector accounting standard. That is EIPSAS, you know, for short. So it hasn't actually, you know, submit a full set of financial statement as required by that international standard. So no opening balance, no clear breakdown of exchange versus non-exchange revenue. So, you know, when if you have to compare that to something, it's like I have this image of something in my head. Now, if you have to compare that to something, it's like handing in a school, handing in your school assignment. Now, in your school assignment, it goes without entire pages. There's like there's an entire page is missing. So, and it's the same thing here. So it's kind of like, you know, you're handing in your school assignment and with some entire pages actually are missing. So without those core documents, you know, you or any, or let's say for the parliament, because this is from the parliament competition. So the parliament and the public, you and I, cannot actually tell whether money came in. You don't see how, when, if you don't have the opening balance sheets, you don't have a clear breakdown of exchange versus non-exchange revenue. So if you don't have that, as I said, it's like you have some pages missing in your assignment, you know? So, and you can't tell whether money came in, money went out, and where it all stand now. So that's one failure, you know, that it didn't follow the accounting standard as required per IPSAS, the International Public Sector Accounting Standard. So that's one issue. All right. So the other issue is also, the next issue is a 30 million investment under the post settlement support fund. All right. Now here's the problem. Now the problem here is that according to the memorandum of understanding, so this is now a memorandum of understanding between Agribank. Agribank was supposed to hold to hold and report those funds. This 30 million investment, this 30 million investment in inverted comma, if you like. So it was actually under now the post-settlement support fund. It was actually Agribank who was supposed to hold and report those funds, not the land acquisition fund. So now in his adverse audit opinion, so in his adverse audit opinion, he indicated that by putting those million on its own books, the fund now has kind of like muddied the water, if you like. So the Auditor General has asked for a full reconciliation with Agribank to now untangle who owns what. So until then, we can't be sure whether the cash even existed in the funds. So you can't tell whether that the cash has even existed in the funds coffin. I mean coffers, not coffin. Yeah. So yeah, that's another issue on that when you look at the auditor's report, review report. So, and there's a land tax. You know, farmers pay their due to NAMRA, but the fund recorded income only when it received the cash. You see the problem? The fund recorded income only when it actually received the cash, and rather than when it was actually owed. You know, I could have actually owed you money 5 years ago, and you only recorded, because I gave it to you yesterday, you only recorded it actually yesterday. So then the result is like, the auditor general, there is a mismatch of some money, like 29.5 million for 2023 and 15.4 million for 2022 between what was recorded. Now, there is that mismatch now between what was recorded and what should have been actually recognized as an accrual on accrual basis. So you understand? So in other words, it's like, you know, the fund actually made itself look like it made itself look richer than it really was. So figures are misleading now when it comes to make decisions in terms of budget and all of that. So yeah, figures that can drive really a bad budget decisions. So, as I said, as he indicated that it doesn't show, it only shows when it received the cash, but rather than when it was actually owed. So, yeah. And, so if you haven't got this money for almost 5 years and you only receive it, you know, when someone looking at the books now, they think that, well, you actually have cash now. You have actually more money than, you know, than maybe the statement is showing. So that's the issue there. So the other thing, the fourth issue is the, and I think this one actually raised eyebrows, as they said. It's a 4.2 million in salary payment for 2022, that came straight from the fund's account. Now, you remember now the account itself The accounts money are meant for buying and rehabilitating, you know, farms. You understand? So those salaries should have been drawn from the ministries of agriculture's budget, not on the fund. So, you know, it's like this. You know, I... so, you can akin, you know, you can do like that. You can just compare that to like you're raiding your children's school fees. So you have, you normally budget your school fees for your children. And now you're using those school fees to pay your own, cell phone bill or something like that, to pay your own cell phone bill. So, it's just not how it's supposed to work. So that's exactly happened. So they're using now the funds, money that is meant to buy and rehabilitate farms to pay actually staff. So that's also what the AG has picked up. And he asked to fix that. So, and the issue five, the fifth issue is the, another thing is that, unauthorized overtime and tuition as well. So there are about 54 hours of overtime claimed, which were not approved by the Ministry of Labor, plus the fund even paid tuition fees for ministry employees. So, and as I said, remember, the fund is its own legal entity. What is the fund? Its own legal entity. Its mandate, it doesn't include footing the bills for ministries training, for ministries staff training. So that's not what it meant to. Now he find out that it's there are money come from the fund to pay, you know, overtime and unauthorized overtime, and also to pay the tuition for ministry's staff. So now these irregular expenses point to a lack of clear governance, and also in terms of the fund, and also maybe blurred lines between the fund and the ministries. And the other issue is then finally the fund couldn't verify a 3.8 million in lease rental fees. So now there aren't regular reconciliation against the lease agreement. So they kind of like, there's no way of knowing if the tenant have paid in full or if those receivables are collectible at all. You have no idea. So it's like, you know, it's like sending, you're sending out a rent invoices and you never actually check who actually paid. So you're just sending it out, the invoice, but you never really check who actually paid. So I think those are some of the things that the AG has actually picked up. So now, why should we care really about this? We have to understand that this institution, it's a cornerstone, it's very important when it comes to land acquisition and as a fund, it can't, and if it's not able to account for its own money, it really undermines the public trust. And that trust is crucial for a program, as you know, that is as sensitive and transformative as the land reform. So if a budget, if budgets are inflated or diverted, that what it means is that fewer beneficiaries, will be able to, it's only fewer beneficiaries will be able to get land. It's only few farmers, you know, farms who will be able to be rehabilitated. So what it means is that the progress, we come to a standstill. You come to a standstill. And as we said, there were about how many monies that were found in account that could have still be used. So that delays affect really rural livelihood, if you like. It affects food security and our national drive to readdress historical. And as you know, what the land injustice means, it really, put us back in terms of readdressing historical imbalances. So, that actually brings us to the end of our show this morning, of unpacking the day. So do join us again tomorrow morning at the same time here on Eagle FM. So please stay tuned and continue to listen to the next programs that are coming your way throughout the day. And Helmut is waiting. So for me, Mike Oshoveli, it's a goodbye for now. Until tomorrow.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
the views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.